Government Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and it is February 20th on the East Coast. We are 3 hours older than those of you living on the West Coast, where it is still the 19th of February, 2008. We have a great show for you this evening, and before I introduce tonight's guest, I want to make a couple of short announcements. First of all, I would like to gratefully thank Reverend Roxy Hampton and Dr. Len Horowitz for the kind words they had to say about my show and about me, and I appreciate what they're doing as well, and I want to extend the same courtesy and make sure you listen to Mission Possible, and also I want to thank them for having me on the show Sunday. It was quite an interesting venture, and it was interesting that the show was a bit prophetic, in fact, because the news the next day talked about some of the issues we were talking about as if they were playing out in real time throughout the world. Some of the G8, or sometimes they're referred to as the G10 governments, were actually upset with what was going on, and we were talking about this USA 193 satellite that is tumbling back to Earth, and the fact that they may use a dangerous weapon. Personally, I think they'll probably use something like some sort of particle beam weapon or pulse code type of weapon to obliterate this thing. That is, if that's what's really happening, we don't even know. The truth sometimes is so elusive. I would like to give a few shout-outs to some new listeners and some folks that have called into the show, specifically Barbara, also John. Now, Barbara's in Tennessee, by the way, so you know which Barbara I'm talking about. Michael in New York, John in California, Karen, Bob, and Bill, David, get well, Crenshaw, Sheila, Sylvia, you get well, and I think I forgot Jill. Also, the general, all the folks with Project Alliance, I appreciate your support of the show and your listening, and your support of me and my endeavors. Now, tomorrow night, I have a first-time guest on the show, and he has written a book called Wrongly Blamed. He's also written another very fine book, which I have, and I've not been able really to complete this book. I'm looking at reading two very large and well-researched books in about 3 days, and it's a little bit of a struggle, but he also wrote Science in the Name of God. Now, Wrongly Blamed is a book about the true events of 9/11, and you're going to want to tune in for this show. Dr. Khalil is very, very knowledgeable and has done literally thousands of interviews on the radio and television, and he's a very popular guest with some of the Patriot networks. And I want to thank Rick Adams for hooking me up with him. Rick's also been on the show as well. And that brings us to... Now, let me make one more point here. If you want to see my schedule until Seth and I get it up on my BBS page, hint, you can go to directlightproductions.com and just click on the page that says Radio Show. You'll get a page that comes up, and then you click on Evident Footprints, and it'll take you to the schedule. There are 2 weeks worth of guests on there, and if you look at it right now, you'll see that the person I'm about to introduce to you is an author. She's written a book called Judaism's Broken Dreams and Shattered Promises, a co-venture with poetess and also musician Holly Avila. I haven't met Holly, and I haven't heard her music, but we're going to talk about that tonight as well as the work of our guest, who is also featured on Rents.com as a contributor, and you can find her work all over the Internet as well as on her own site, JudyAndreas.com. And with that, I bring on to Evident Footprints my good friend, Judy Andreas.
Good evening, Don. Well, good morning, Don, as the case may be.
Well, it's morning for us, but it's like the middle of the, just after dinner time for the folks on the West Coast.
I think I feel a little envy creeping up. You know, I was your first guest, right?
Actually, you were. In fact, that date, I believe, was June 14th, if my memory serves me correctly.
It serves you better than mine. Well, I hope I'm not your last.
No. In fact, it's not my style to wait this long to have you back on the show, or really any of my guests. You know, with all the things that we've both had going on in our lives, I'm glad that we both settled down enough to reconnect and bring it back onto the show. This is a whole new audience, too, a very spiritually oriented audience, and they're sharp. Definitely people who would appreciate your work, and I felt that not only could you grace my show, but you could also grace BBS Radio with your work, which we're going to talk about.
Wow, so. Scaring me away. No, thank you for the kind words.
No, you're too modest. You really are.
Not always. Nah, maybe I am.
Now, I've got you featured on a couple of pages on my site, in fact. Although I never got the archive from your first show up on my site. Mm-hmm. I do have your two books are there on my books page. And you were also one of my first sponsors, and you know, when you're my sponsor, you're my sponsor for life. You know, I can't throw you out with bathwater.
Well, it's beautiful. I have to thank you for that page. It's really so beautifully done. And,
well, it was just well, thank you. You know,
thank you.
I'm doing all this work myself, so you know, this is a new area for me. I'm very skilled with a computer. I use it primarily for music and for my research, so it's a little bit different. You know, when you start moving into areas that other people are really, really good at, you know, so I'm learning, let's put it that way. But the point was to make your work available to people so that when they listen to the show, they want to check out the site, they can actually see, yes, this person wrote a book, and I can see the cover, and I see some of the work there. And your website, JudyAndreas.com, really looks nice now.
Thank you. It looked pretty shabby before. My friend Tony redid it for me, and I'm really excited about it because it looks so much better.
Well, it looks very spiritual, and it matches your work, let's put it that way. You have this warmth and this feeling coming out of it that is in your essays, and even when you're a little bit down and out and you write these really, really tearjerker pieces, and I guess it's your way of venting, right? Or or ranting. On the first show and the only show that you were on with me, as far as you know, my own show, you and I had talked about what propelled you into a lot of the writing that you were doing, and you mentioned that 9/11 was a big influence. So we'll save the audience, you know, a lot of time there, because I would rather spend time talking about your work and actually having you read a few pieces, if you would grace us with that.
I would love to.
Okay, now, probably a good start would be something from Judaism. That's your first piece of work, I understand, as far as a book is concerned.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Okay. I just happen to have something here. What a coincidence. Now you'll hear. I mean, I am spiritual. Or so I've been told. But I'll start off with a downer and continue with them.
Okay, now what's the name of the... You're going to name the pieces and all that, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. This one actually was written in 2004. So some of it is going to sound maybe a little, not current, let's put it that way. It's called Waiting for Godot, and here goes. What can we do has become the bonus question on the test of life. Answer this one correctly and fix the universe. Answer this one and make sense of the senseless. Perhaps someone will come and help us. Is Jesus coming back? Was he here before? Will he rapture all the believers and leave the rest of the population to choke on nuclear waste? Nuclear? Something has gone wrong. It did not start on September 11, 2001. It merely reached a crescendo. And in the 3 years since that tragic event, there are ever-increasing numbers of people with shoulders stooping under the weight of an overwhelming sense of despair. Some ask if things will get worse. Some already know the answer. On November 22, 1963, John Fitzgerald Kennedy was assassinated. Was it a lone gunman gone trigger-happy in a book depository? Was there a magical bullet that caused 7 wounds, 2 to Kennedy and 5 to Governor Connally? Son of a gun, this bullet paused 1.6 seconds in midair before entering Connally. After entering and re-entering the two men, this mischievous little critter wound up intact on a stretcher in Parkland Hospital. It's got to be true because I read it in the Warren Commission. Bullet crap. After the assassination of JFK, Lyndon Baines Johnson stepped to the plate. 40 days after burying Kennedy, Johnson signed National Security Action Memo 273, which reversed Kennedy's Vietnam withdrawal policy and began the worst war in this country, or so it appeared at the time. Perhaps the worst war in this country is the one we are presently fighting. Perhaps the worst war in this country is the one we are about to fight, or maybe the one after that. We are slaughtering people because terrorists flew planes into the World Trade Center and killed 3,000 of our people. Doesn't that make you mad enough to bomb every country with oil? Stop sending me those pictures from Fallujah. They are awful. People return my email with notes of annoyance. Too awful to view? I'm sorry I have intruded upon your balmy evening with a reality, Graham. Close your eyes and you can pretend that innocents are not having their innards blown out. Don't look at those little children deformed and decapitated. Don't look into the eyes of that mother who weeps for the loss of her beloved. You might find yourself weeping along with her. What's on HBO? What can we do? Maybe the answer is a resounding nothing. Maybe we have already done it. Perhaps we did nothing while our country incrementally slipped away from ethics and principles and compassion. Perhaps we did nothing while soulless, gutless, less than humans took charge of our food, our air, our minds, our lives, and our souls. The drama is not over. It's intermission time, and as we relax, puffing contentedly on the cigarette of complacency, we try to forget. While I'm standing by a river, but the water doesn't flow, it boils with every poison you can think of, and I'm underneath the streetlight, but the light of joy I know, scared beyond belief, way down in the shadows, and the perverted fear of violence chokes the smile on every face, and common sense is ringing out the bell. This ain't no technological breakdown. Oh, no, this is the road to hell. And I have to thank Chris Rea for that little road to hell at the end.
That is, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking to myself, first of all, it's a beautiful piece. And I was thinking about where I was the day Kennedy was shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall a very famous politician, not that well-loved these days, not remembering where he was on that day, yet his picture showed up right on the scene in front of the book depository.
I guess he had a blackout.
That came out after the fact. And then I said to myself, well, you wrote this 41 years after the event, and it's been 44 years since that event. Actually, a little over 44 years, and I still remember where I was on that day, as I'm sure you do.
I do, yeah.
And you remember what you were doing at that time. It had that impact, much like I'm sure you remember 9/11.
Well, yeah.
And the way you tied the two together, there's obviously a connect between the two most devious and the two most sadistic acts performed on our country during our lifetime, where something was stolen. It is as if the soul of the nation was stolen, and that's what comes out in the piece as well. Beautiful, beautiful work.
Well, thank you, Don. I have my favorites, you know. When you're writing essays, and sometimes I'm not writing essays, I'm taking a little hiatus, but sometimes there's something that you want to write about, but you feel like you're struggling with every word, and you rewrite it maybe 5 or 6 times, and then there are the other ones that kind of write themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And those are my babies, and I love them.
Well, as you know, I've ventured into journalism, and really, you know, music is still who I'm about and what I'm about. And I've had to learn to be somewhat of a wordsmith, learning to express my feelings in ways that I can be concise and very accurate with what I'm trying to say and what I'm feeling. And you just seem to have that gift. You say the phrase, it comes out of thin air. You're like the Federal Reserve.
Thank you. I don't think that was a compliment. Federal Reserve that everybody wants to get rid of?
Well, no, I don't mean it like that. I mean, they just make money out of thin air, and it just runs the world.
I'm a fiat essayist.
and or usury, one of the two. No, you know I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
That may not be the best analogy in the world, but I think you understand what I mean, that you
yeah.
just pull these things out of the air and out of the ether, maybe. Or maybe you just have this deep, deep connection with spirit and the right words come out. I get the feeling that when you write such a great piece that you really don't struggle. Like you just said, it sort of just comes out and does
itself. I didn't struggle with that one. I was really moved and it came out. It was a strange time in my life because I was working for social services. And, well, that's kind of a whole, that's a novel in itself.
Everybody's favorite job, right?
And I used to get these inspirations before I'd leave in the morning. I'd sit down, I'd start to write, and then I'd think, oh, no, I have to go to social services. Because I was still with the essay. I even went to a movie one night and had to leave the movie because the essay kept haunting me, so...
Hmm.
May it happen again soon.
Yeah. Now, you know, I've had those experiences. Let's say I'm in a studio and I might be producing a group and listening to them play, you know, listening to the solos, and I'll hear something. I have kind of these freaky ears in the studio, and I'll hear when the drummer's sticks click and mm-hmm. the band's really jamming, you know, and they don't hear it. The drummer didn't hear it, and I'll say, no, we got to stop, I'm telling you. And then they're really angry with me, and we go back, and we find this little mistake. And they say, how did you hear that? It's hard to explain, but it's the same thing you're talking about, is that when you're really, really into what you're doing, you're absorbed in it. And if it doesn't feel right or something doesn't fit, it makes itself very apparent. and you end up just compounding the problem if you don't fix it or you don't correct it.
And it's interesting what it does to time, you know, how all of a sudden you look at your watch and you can't believe it because it's just flown. It's just, you've been so incredibly absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of proves the illusion of time.
Oh, yes. And in fact, reading these pieces, you know, believe it or not, I've read Judaism's and I've had plenty of time to do it. No, I actually read these, you know, the day you sent them to me last year. I think it took me 2 days. I read through Judaism's, and then I read through Broken Dreams and Shattered Promises, and I went back and started reading them again to see what I had missed. I learned a lot about writing essays just from, you know, you're somewhat of a master at it, I have to tell you.
Well, you really flatter me because I'm untrained. I didn't major in journalism or in creative writing or anything that people might think, and it just was just something that one day, I guess, as you said, when I went to a conference about 9/11 and I was just motivated, came home and wrote something, put it on the web, and the next thing I knew it was traveling all over the web. And in those days, the essays were just coming fast and furiously.
Well, being uneducated as a journalist myself and you, I would have to say, you know, we're in pretty good company because those, for the most part, let's say the preponderance of journalists that went to school and majored in journalism are part of the propaganda machine, so they're not all that great themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not all of them, of course. There are exceptions to the rule, but it's really, if you have a gift, it doesn't matter. I think the gift that you have can't really be taught. You either have that connection, and that's a natural thing. That's part of your connection with God. And mm-hmm. You can't teach that in school. I'm sorry, you just can't teach it. Now you can teach journalism, you can teach grammar, you can teach the rules, but you tend to break the rules, and you still make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it very friendly for a lot of people.
Yeah, I was told that also my essays are not very long, and these days people are not into reading long things. They're used to sound bites on television, and actually a good friend now who had once been a host of a show I was on said that I did, my essays were almost like sound bites, and so that's good, because some people drone on and on, and people just sort of tune out. I hope they don't tune out when I read.
well, just don't start adding commercials to them, and you'll be fine. I'm just going to jump around a little bit, if that's okay,
sure.
Because the last time you and I had talked, and this was going back just before August, if you remember that. I feel like 3 inches tall right now because we hadn't spoken in quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, I was promoting your gig at the Bowery Poetry Club in New York.
Mm-hmm.
With Holly, your co-writer in Broken Dreams and Shattered Promises.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally learned how to say that title, by the way.
I finally learn.
I would say broken. Broken.
It's easier
promises
to say broken
and
promises
dreams.
And shattered dreams.
But I understand the meaning of the title, so you just switch it around. how did that go, by the way? I was curious to find out.
Well, I think that the fault kind of lay within us for the not doing enough publicity, because itself, it was really great.
Mm-hmm.
But it could have been better attended, but we just, and I'll just say I, You know, I just was not good at marketing myself, didn't know exactly where to put the ads, the flyers, etc. But Holly is quite a musician. She does world music, and I did my poetry and my essays first, and then we went into, and she did a very powerful poem, and then we went into her music, and it was good. It was good, and I hopefully we will find other venues to do it and continue to do it so it gains momentum. Because I think we have a good product.
Well, we should put a show together where you guys can come on together and you can do your little Bowery Club routine right on Evident Footprints. Why not?
Yeah. Read the same essays again.
Well, no, you have, what you'd have to do for that one is write a new one.
Oh.
Ah, see, I put you on the spot now. You got to go back to work. I'm really, knowing that Holly's a musician, I'm interested in listening to her music. Does she have any recordings?
She does. Actually, I have one of have a Blue Planet somewhere. maybe she's out in the audience if she hopefully she will call in and she can talk about her music, because her music is really good and I think it's very timely.
So, yeah, I get this impression because I haven't interviewed her. Now, I've read her work. She's a very good, I think she's kind of witty, actually,
yes,
as a poetess.
Mm-hmm.
Her work, in fact, the on my webpage that features Broken Dreams and Shattered Promises, the piece that's there is right, she's just nailing it to on the head, every word, and she uses an economy of words.
Mm-hmm.
In her writing, as you well do too. You have similar styles, and yet there's a bit of a difference. And I know that you're both into music. You play piano, if I remember correctly. Isn't that correct?
I do.
You do, see? You thought
piano.
I forgot about that.
No. Don't ask me to play on your next show.
Now, my intuition tells me that she plays guitar, but you've never told me what instrument she plays. So,
you're an intuitive person, so you probably know more about it. Probably scare us with how much you can figure out.
Well,
yeah. And she sings. She has a very lovely voice.
Now, I have to say this. Well, you got me really curious. She writes like a person with red hair. I can say that now, if sense.
No, you must have seen a picture.
she's blonde, right?
You did that. Do you, are you on the psychic hotline or something?
Well, I am psychic. You know that.
Yeah, I know that. I should have called you before my last adventure.
So she, well, live and learn.
I get it. So they say.
Yeah. So you didn't answer my question. Or, well,
she's,
I didn't really
ask
it.
Yes, she is redheaded.
She's redheaded, really.
Yeah.
Okay, so you see, there's something about the way she writes that the music comes through. Now, I would even venture to say, and I haven't heard a lick of her music, that if she's not doing a ballad, her music is very fiery.
Yeah.
Very rhythmical and taunting almost.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that?
I would say that. I hope she's out there because I think she'd be really psyched by what you're saying, and it's very true.
Hmm. Okay. Well, now, that's what I pick up from her poetry. So whether you think you guys are communicating with us, the reader, or not, there's an example right there that your writing really speaks. And you and I have never met face to face either. As you know, I know a few of my guests personally. Jim Murray, I was able to meet. You know, he's on every Friday, mm-hmm. and he came up to Ohio a few months ago, and we spent a whole day together, mostly eating.
Eating what?
Well, we had lunch, but it was like a three-hour lunch. You know, we used to do that in Italy, but you know, not in Ohio.
Rouse and tofu, I trust.
Well, there, you know, it was like really drawn out because we were talking. We were talking about science and discoveries and just everything under the sun. And then we had a chance to visit at a laboratory, and I got to see all these really crazy inventions. You know, I saw a hoop antenna with a light bulb hooked up to it, and there were no wires except the ones attached to the light bulb. And this hoop antenna was putting out electricity, lighting up the bulb. You know, I saw really flipped out inventions that just blew my mind. So I can imagine that if I spent a weekend with you guys listening to your music and listening to you recite and really seeing you perform, it would be stimulating.
Mm-hmm.
So, just so the audience knows, you know, that we're familiar with each other because we've done a couple of shows together. Besides my show, you were with me on RBN the evening that I subbed for John Statmiller after doing a two-hour substitute, you know, guest host slot for Michael Herzog. And
and I had called in to the show, and then all of a sudden you just, he said, by the way, would you like to be my guest on the next show or something? And a lot of advance notice, Don. But
you found out when I did.
Yeah. But we did talk a lot about spirituality. It was quite optimistic. I must say that when I looked at some of these pieces that I've pulled out, in case you had asked, so nicely asked me to read, that there is a quality that, as you were saying, there's a quality that's almost gloomy, but at least something else is showing through. And maybe it's my heartache to see what's going on, because I expect so much more and know we're capable as human entities of so much more. And it's just, it breaks my heart to see us really asleep at the wheel here.
Mm-hmm. For those folks that haven't read your work, I can tell you that, yes, you do write some gloomy pieces. I've seen some on Rents.com that are very gloomy. But what you inspire in someone is the... let's say, the impetus for them to face their own denial about these things. And once you have to face this, you have to think about it. If you take the apathy and the somewhat dumbed-down, and I'm being very general here, the dumbed-down part of the American public that's not aware of anything that's going on other than American Idol and maybe the soaps and who's in the Super Bowl, sounds like I'm writing a piece, doesn't it?
I'm copying it down. It'll be my next piece.
Yeah. You cause us to sort of look at the things that are right there in your face, and nobody's really talking about it. Nobody's paying attention to it. But,
well, not when Britney Spears is having a nervous breakdown.
Oh,
got to
yeah.
prioritize, Don.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of having myself checked into her hospital so I can get her on the show, too. The first question I'm going to ask her, are you wearing any underwear tonight?
Yeah. And then ask her if 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah, right. Anyway, what I was saying is that you cause us to face really our own demons and to question whether we are in denial. And you display I'm going to say this rather humbly to you, too. And I know that that you are a very humble person, but you display a lot of courage in what you say. You found a way to say the things that I have to yell when I'm on one of my rants, you know, alone on my show. And it's when the Holy Spirit sort of takes over and impulses me to say all these things that are eating at my gut, so to speak. And you just have this way of bringing that out. That's a segue to your next piece. Now, show us a different side of Judy, if you would.
Oh, it's not a different side at all. I just wanted to. It's a different book, but okay. this is one of my favorite babies too. Maybe it's a little similar to the other one because of the way I laid it out. And maybe after that at this time.
A jump for joy, a frightening party fancy, and a balls-to-the-wall blowout. So much to gain, so much to lose.
Now, are you hearing that audio
what
in the back?
What was that?
I don't know.
Was that you, John, having a rant?
No, it sounded like somebody was preaching or something.
Well, it wasn't my poem.
And some of that New York traffic, huh?
With another stream.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not. Won't put people in the mood for this. But anyway, this is called They Too Have Dreams, and I'll thank Yeats and Barb Dylan before I begin.
Okay, Matt, make sure you stay close to the phone so we can hear you, too.
Okay. Is this good?
Yes, that's
okay.
Good.
Had I the heavens embroidered cloths and wrought with gold and silver light, the blue and the dim and the dark cloths of night and light and half-light, I would spread the cloths under your feet. But I, being poor, have only my dreams. I have spread my dreams under your feet. Tread softly, because you tread on my dreams. People regard them as eyesores. The homeless litter your landscape. They seek refuge in doorways and on park benches. You turn away from them in disgust. You step over them with thoughts of condemnation. You see them as less than human. You see them as a visual nuisance. They created their own situations, you tell yourself. How easily you rationalize your inhumanity. No, my friends, they are people. They are flesh and blood just like you. They have hearts and souls, and perhaps at one time they too had dreams. What happened to those dreams? Why are these human beings on the street? Why are they destitute? Why are they cold and hungry? Perhaps it's not for you to know and certainly not for you to judge. But don't turn away. It's a very short distance from your warm living room to the street. When my children were small, I would spend one Saturday a month volunteering at a soup kitchen in New York City. Sometimes I would bring my children with me. The first time I worked at St. Ignatius Church, I had no idea what to expect. I and the other volunteers scurried around, preparing a meal that consisted of hot soup, a sandwich, a hard-boiled egg, coffee, and dessert. Since the winter had not yet settled over New York, we set up tables outside. And then the people arrived. It was a line that never ended. It was a line of ragged clothing and hungry mouths. The line never stops, I said to a co-worker. She nodded. I wondered if I could ever become desensitized to the specter before me. No, never. Many of the homeless I've met have been physically and mentally ill. Some of them have drowned their despair in liquor or drugs. Some of them have shared their dreams. Some of them do not speak. Judge not, lest ye be judged. There are limited services for the homeless. In the eyes of the populace, they are merely useless feeders. They have been cast out on the street by a cold and indifferent society. They have been cast out on the street by people who rail against humanity. They have been cast aside by people who are quick to point a finger halfway around the world, people who write screaming screeds while in their street humanity bleeds. And now my youngest son is 23, and he has a female friend who volunteers at a homeless shelter. Last week, Jesse accompanied Heather on her mission of mercy. They cooked dinner for the group and slept at the shelter. In the morning, they cook breakfast. After breakfast, the people are tossed back on the street. Homeless people are just like us, he told me. But that wasn't all he had to say. He had a tragic story to tell. Jesse told me about the man with the colostomy. A policeman had approached the man, assuming that the bulge under his clothes was a bottle of liquor. He demanded that the man hand it over. The man was confused and stood immobilized. The policeman grew angry at what he interpreted to be lack of compliance. He repeated his order. The man looked at him with childlike innocence. The policeman could no longer contain his rage. He punched the man in what he assumed was the contraband. The man died. There were no charges brought against the policeman. Oh, what'll you do now, my blue-eyed son? And what'll you do now, my darling young one? I'm going back out for the rain starts a-falling. I'll walk to the depths of the deepest dark forest where the people are many and the hands are all empty, where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters, where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison, and the executioner's face is always well hidden, where hunger is ugly, where souls are forgotten, where black is the color and none is the number. And I'll tell it and think it and speak it and breathe it, reflect it from the mountain so all souls can see it. Then I'll stand on the ocean until I start thinking, but I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's a hard rain's gonna fall.
Yes. Now, that's a little bit different, but I see what you mean.
It's just as cheery.
Tell the listeners how you and Holly came to, let's say, combine your work together. Was it so you could make a book? Or no, I'm just kidding.
Yes, let's make a book. I approached Holly, actually. I had still been writing my essays, and she was a poet, and I knew she was a poet, and I wanted to see some of her work. And she started flooding me. She has loads of work. It was hard to choose from the plethora of poetry that she presented. And I guess the broken dreams and chatter. Holly is very optimistic, much more optimistic, I'll say, than I am. And so I don't know if she particularly cared for broken dreams and shattered promises, but I looked at it as because the second book is not all political, as you've seen. There's personal stories, and so I looked at it as loss of a love affair, loss of the American dream. And if I can read something that Maria Heller wrote on the back of the book, she wrote, "Alas, the America of my youth, or rather the illusion of it, is gone, shattered in so many tiny pieces by those who intend to rule and ruin the planet. Who will speak for the children of our children? Who will let them know that there were many who fought to save a dying experiment? We will." And so that ends on a nice optimistic note. Yeah, we will. So we can't be quiet. We have to point out what's happening. And to me, the homeless, I guess, well, that's definitely a very visible problem, though people want to make it invisible. But I think it resonates with me in so many ways, because I think so many of us really feel that homelessness within us, especially when we look around at what's going on. And this doesn't feel like our home. It's just not warm and loving and compassionate enough.
See, now you're writing while you're speaking. You made a very profound statement with an economy of words. You said that homelessness was in us. And that's the gift that you have, is that you just have this way of listen how many words I'm using to describe what you just said. You said it with a couple of words. One thing I notice, and again, this makes me really want to hear her music, is the fact that as a composer myself, and I'm not a bad lyricist either. The lyrics of a song tell a story, and lyrics, if they're well written, they sort of complement the music, and the music complements the lyrics. They sort of, they have a bond, a glue in the emotion that comes out from both of them, and they can interact with each other, and one can carry the other. Often a good lyric carries a bad melody, mm-hmm. or a bad harmony, and vice versa. Good music can make the worst lyrics in the world sound fantastic because of the emotion that can come through the music. And I've often been approached by people who want me to write music to their lyrics, and the lyrics really... this is not always the case, but I think you'll understand what I mean when I say that the lyrics don't lend themselves to writing music. Mm-hmm. And many people, in trying to write music to people's poetry, you know, like E.E. Cummings or Carl Sandburg or, mm-hmm. you know, the old guard of the poets, the American poets anyway, Holly seems to have a way to make her poetry very musical, and I wouldn't write music to it. I would say this should stand on its own. And then there are those that just feel that poetry has to have music to it, and good poetry is music in a way. Do you agree with that, or do I sound like I'm just some kind of weirdo that doesn't know what he's talking
about?
Well,
you always sound like a weirdo. Who doesn't know what he's talking about?
Well,
I'm kidding.
One to know
no,
one,
of course,
it?
Of course. Sometimes the music, I guess, can compete with the lyrics, and then it kind of dilutes them. And if you have a powerful lyric, why sing about it? When mm-hmm. she sings about her, let me get this title straight, and I'll probably spend the rest of the show looking it up. But... our unified field theory of conspiracies. I can't imagine anybody thinking to that because it is what it is, and it really stands alone very, very well, and I think music would just knock it over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So then when you found out that each of you was both a musician, I'm sure there was it's like a double whammy. You have this affinity for and this mutual respect for each other's work because you understand music as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is really a different art form from, you know, from writing essays and writing poetry and writing these hit pieces that you write sometimes, you know, the ones that make the rounds with the Patriots.
And then, of course, I can't not mention Tony Malone, who wrote a couple of books in his own right, like The Bible for People Who Hate the Bible. And he's mentioned on my site, and then you can zip over to his site. But he started off with Judaism. He was just somebody who liked my writing and got in touch with me, and then he found the illustrations and put them in and did the same thing with my second book. And really walked, since he had written, he sort of walked me through how to get them published and how to get the ISBN number, because all this was totally foreign to me. So I have to thank him because I think... these pictures, some of them just are so perfect. They really say exactly what the essay or the poem is saying.
Mm-hmm.
And something like that, if you do that wrong, it can kill it too. Something absolutely ridiculous, and then you get into something that's going to tear your heart out.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you been... approached by any publishing companies to with offers to do another work, or is this more or less so far above mainstream that you're forced to publish on your own?
Well, I've had a couple of people ask me if I wanted to write columns, and I think I'm commitment phobic, you know. And when I see something that's going to be a steady gig, and then there'll be pressure, I sort of shy away from it.
Mm-hmm.
There have been people, one man asked me to review his book on homeschooling, and it turned out to be a pretty good essay. So, things like that, I'll go for. Or I had a friend who was fired from a station, and I wrote something, and it worked out. To me, it's also finding the right title, the title that's going to grab somebody and be a Judaism. Like my first book is called, there are some things that I call Judaisms. I didn't have a chance and probably won't have a chance to read The Supermarket, but that's more like my, a little more upbeat. So mm-hmm. I'm not a totally depressing character that, even though I said in my latest piece, you know, if you don't, and also in the 4th of July one about not inviting me, I'm not much fun these days at parties, and if you don't invite me, I'll understand. But that's not really true. The thing is that that I'm cognizant of what's going on, and I want to talk about it. And if I do it with humor, I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I do. Sometimes I succeed in that. But
I hear that in your voice when you and I talk about things, and just for the audience, you know, Judy and I occasionally will have an off the air conversation. In fact, most of our conversations are off the air, and we talk about very, very serious issues. We talk about the topics that I explore with other guests who are more expert than me on issues like 9/11 and things that are going on with the Constitution and the government, and we occasionally will talk about the Bible, but we see how everything is tied together, and those of us that are really studying one aspect of what's going on in the world get drawn into all the others. You have to. You can't
you
ignore
them. You have to, and they seem so tied together. A friend came over today, and we turned out I put on an old Jordan Maxwell tape, and then there was this guy, I think his name was Jason Whitney, talking about finances and law, and then you really see, and you see it in Zeitgeist too. You see the tie-in of things and the programming of people, and then you, especially in the Jordan Maxwell one, there was. You see the spiritual being, the real person, the person that's not just a birth certificate and a number and sweat equity, you know,
mm-hmm.
the person that lives inside your skin that really has not gotten any play the way things have been set up in this culture. And it's heartbreaking because we know how things could be.
Mm-hmm.
And not the way they are now. But being philosophical, it is what it is for a reason. And what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, this is something that we talk about pretty much on every show that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this whole network, the BBS radio network, really is talking about the individual coming to a state of recognition in terms of individual responsibility, and that's the responsibility of awakening and becoming conscious, becoming a fully 100% conscious galactic being, if you want to use that term. To where we step into our purpose and step into what we can do to help other people. There are a lot of people that that really are not spiritually mature enough to awaken to that.
How do you deal? I'm going to and I'll say this because I know they won't be listening, but I'm going to find myself in the company of a couple for lunch tomorrow that really have bought the Hannity line, the Limbo line. And I know politics will come up, but it's going to be a way for me to not get angry and not confrontational, but maybe to get my point across in a gentle way. I don't know. These are challenges, and these are challenges that life presents all the time because you can't sort of hang out in the alternative world. You have to touch the people that are walking around in the matrix.
Well, that's a good question you asked. If I can offer an answer of sorts, and this is maybe not specific to that particular couple that you're talking about, I've often been asked by people, do you really believe the stuff that you're talking about? That's the first thing they say. And I tell them, no, I don't believe it. I know it. And there's a difference. You see, you're asking me the question from within the matrix, or from within the paradigm. And I am saying to you that I know I'm not, this is something that has grown on me or grown upon me through my experiences and through my research and my knowledge and my interaction with other people who are also awake. The question is that I would ask these people, let me put it this way. If you were at home at night, say in the middle of the night, and you were sleeping, and you were with your wife and your children were in the other room, and you heard someone breaking into your house, and somehow you knew that they were going to attack your children, either abduct your children or kill your children, and maybe kill your wife and maybe you, or steal everything from your home, would you defend your property and would you defend your family? Well, you get immediately, of course I would. Okay, you would. I trust that you're telling me the truth. Now, suppose a group, a small clique of people, secreted themselves into the country and did the same thing to your country. Would you protect your country and your home and your family? And then they say, what do you mean? you see, there's where they have the problem that they can't imagine that that could happen to their country. Yet that's exactly what's happened to our country. As
yeah,
you well know.
But also, you know, it's in, your analogy was interesting because what if somebody was breaking in and your wife said, nobody's breaking in, go back to sleep. And this seems to be the country. There's a group saying, well, somebody is breaking in and they're stealing all our rights. We don't have freedom. We're in a prison without bars. And, we're going to continue to lose our liberty unless, things change drastically and more people wake up. And, and there are people who are saying, no, I'm listening to the sound bites on the mainstream media and saying, no, everything's under control. Look, there was an orange alert when I was in Denver airport both times. Every time I've been in the Denver airport, there's been an orange alert. Go figure. You know, it's just so fake. But people feel comfortable when they hear that. They've got it under control. They're protecting us. You see that? Now, what do you do in an orange alert? You hold on to your suitcase or your pocketbook, whereas you would just toss it around and go to the ladies' room. You know, nothing different much happens, or maybe you profile people that shouldn't be profiled. It's just such a strange thing because the things that are bothering some of us are the things that are making other people feel good. one of the women I'm having lunch with tomorrow, she had said on the radio that she was thrilled with the Patriot Act, and I'm sure she would be thrilled with the microchip. And that's the thing that I've heard people say. They won't have to force the microchip on us. People will be begging for it.
Well, she's probably going to be the first one in line for a flu shot, too.
I'm sure she's had it.
She's had it already. Oh, my goodness. Well, Judy, unfortunately, the time has flown, and we're
really
out of
has.
Time. But I want to have you back again, and I don't want to wait so long this time.
Okay.
Will you extend the invitation to Holly as well? And, you know, we should give her recognition for her part of Broken Dreams and Shattered Promises. And
I definitely will. And is this show archived? So I would like her to hear it because maybe she went to sleep because she had to be up early tomorrow.
We can put Seth and Don on the spot if either one is listening. Hopefully we have an engineer. Usually they get posted pretty quickly. There've been a lot of, there's been a interference with the network lately, and so they've had to deal with those types of problems, but they're really good about getting them up there, and we'll make sure that she gets to hear it. If you send me some of her music to listen to, so I can pick out some songs to play on the show when she comes back.
Excellent, yeah.
Would that be
feasible? That would be wonderful. She would love that.
Maybe you can work that out with her. And
I will.
And if it's good stuff, we'll play it on BBS. I'm sure they'd be happy to play it.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as she's not hitting us up for royalties. we'll help
she
her promote it.
She is not your most materialistic person, I assure you.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was fun.
It was my pleasure, Don.
And we have to do this again very soon, so you'll come back, I hope.
Of course I'll come back.
Stay away
Lord
from
willing,
the Denver.
I'll be back.
Stay away from the Denver airport. That place is evil-looking anyway.
It's very evil. There's a whole vibe there, and there's too many people living underground and preparing to live underground. It's very strange. NWO airport, isn't it?
Yes. Well, we'll have to talk about that the next time you come on the show, too. You know, that's right up my alley. The underground bases. Okay, well.
Okay, thank you, Don.
Thank you very much, Judy, and thank you to the listening audience. You've been listening to Evident Footprints and our special guest, Judy Andreas. That's what happens when you combine the word host and guest together. You get ghost. Our special guest has been Judy Andreas. Visit her website. Please check out her books. They're not very expensive, and they're worth their weight in gold. Judaisms and Broken Dreams and Shattered Promises. You can get them through my website, directlightproductions.com. Just click on the books link. It'll take you to her pages. And you can also go to Judy Andreas, and that's JudyAndreas.com. JudyAndreas.com. Thanks, Judy, and thank you, everyone. I'm Don Nikoloff, and I'll be back tomorrow evening with Dr. Qasem Khalil. You don't want to miss tomorrow's show. In the meantime, peace, love, and light, and have a good night.